Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, presented by Zwift. Zwift January update is here. More on that in a second, but this is the Cadel Evans Great Ocean Road Race. I'll have to check if that's the longest name in World Tour One Day races. Maybe they're just trying to rival like Brugge de Panne and Kern Brussel Kerner.
What's up with these Australian races, like putting brand names in front of every single stage and the Santa Sota under with every stage? And now Deakin University, Cadel Evans Great Ocean Road Race? Or what was that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, free plug for Deakin University there. Maybe Benji's doing an exchange program next year. Those overseas student fees, Benji, I don't blame you. They're pretty heavy. Yeah. Like it was in the TDU as well. Do they do it in other races?
Not sure.
Probably not in the tour or anything. I mean, we shouldn't be too mean about it because it's like, for once, depending on how you look for it, we've got races in a non-heartland country that also isn't a sports washing exercise, although TDU could maybe debate that as well. So I've just proven whatever tangent that is. Anyway, this is all about Cadel, who lives in Switzerland, I think. 140Ks from Geelong to Geelong in honor of Australia's first only Tour de France winner. Two ascents of the Chalambra Crescent after a sort of rolly parkour through Barnheads before through Torquay, where there's some sprint points, but it's all about that Chalambra Crescent climb in the suburbia of Geelong. 900 meters, 9% steep part at the end, and just after it is a little kicker to the Melville climb, 600 meters, 8.3%. It kind of goes, under the radar on this climb, on this parkour. They do that once, go through the finish line, and then they do Chalambra and Melville combo again, cresting Chalambra 8.5 Ks. I'm going to call it Chalambra. We're in Spain now. And then Melville crest 6 Ks from the finish or so, with a little flat, false flat downhill run-in, flat sprint. So two ascents, men do four tomorrow. What do you think about the parkour, Benji? You were saying off-air you didn't mind it.
I actually like it pretty much because, like, kind of reminds me of, like, a puncher kind of world championships parkour. If it was, like, longer and if it had, like, four or five times this climb, then it would actually be quite a selective race, I'd say. So I think it's good parkour, and it showed in the race. But you do have the situation where the initial part of the race is not the most entertaining, huh? Because we just had multiple breakaways in this race. We had a breakaway up the road initially with three riders, then they got caught, then a breakaway of two riders, then they got caught, then some attacks followed later, but they got caught again. And eventually, we still have a peloton going into the last 55-ish kilometers where we've got some moves that I did not expect. We're not at the Chalambra Crescent, not even close. We're like 26 kilometers before the first Chalambra Crescent. And Crescent. Sprat attacks.
I got a Crescent.
Wait. Crescent? Crescent?
It's not descent. Yeah, it's Crescent.
Okay,
I get
I'll
to laugh
it.
At you. You've been laughing at me for 2.5 fucking years saying Belgian and Dutch places. I'm allowed to have one. One time,
mate,
I get to correct you.
Even I'm getting roasted for the Belgian names because I
really?
Tried saying them in English by accident sometimes. Campenards instead of Campenards. Like, anyway,
really?
I'm sorry. I apologize to the Australian government, to Patrick Bro himself, to Premier
koalas.
Minister, whatever you have over there. Anyway, koalas, yeah. Sorry, koalas. I don't know. Did you have like those birds or something? Emus? Emus. That's what I'm most sad about. Anyway, on topic again, we had an attack by Sprat and Manley. As in, Sprat went first at 53K to go, like, slide uphill, nothing crazy. she tried to like make a move happen for something, and then Manly did something like a bit later, like half a kilometer later. I was like thinking, what's the point here? What are they trying to create? Are they trying to get like a situation with multiple riders up the road, or did I get it wrong? Was it not spread? Was it a teammate? It was a really weird situation.
I'm not sure exactly. I do think Trek kind of relied on Spratt to be the attacker a little bit too much. I know she followed on first Chalambra. I will give a quick shout out to Keely Bennett, who I met at TDU, who crashed badly at TDU. I didn't realize she was back on the bike already and she was in the break, so kudos to her. But yeah, Trek seemed to me, Benji, they didn't in TDU and they didn't again today. It definitely wasn't Chapman. They're not really using Chapman as an attacker. They use her to set pace, to do lead outs, to bring things back for Spratt, to defend when Spratt's up the road.
Yeah.
They don't use her strength yet as an attacker. And in TDU and Cadell's at least. And I think that might be a little bit of a mistake. They use Hansen up the road in a little bit of a peculiar way, which we'll see in a second. But yeah, first Chalambra, it explodes. Double Hickok, EF have been good in TDU. They're good again today. They just don't have that your top rider to go with Spratt. But yeah, Double Hickok goes at the foot of the climb, Spratt's on the wheel, and then a bigger group forms with Arachest and Noskova. That ZAF team actually is doing quite well here in Australia as well. Chapman, they're pacing for Spratt, Benji. I don't really think she should do that, because Spratt, it's like, let's do an analogy. Let's say Chapman is Tayshe Benoit, extremely strong, versatile in the Jumbo Classic squad, but Spratt's not Wout van Aert. She's got one way of winning, which is going solo. She is not going to win a sprint from the group. Wouldn't it be more effective if she was used to attack ahead from that group, like Jumbo did in Omloop?
I think so as well. Like the situation that happened in Australia, in the Australian Champs, if I recall correctly, was them also rolling attacks and not necessarily pacing for each other, because maybe they hadn't realized who was the strongest yet in Sothov, and it delivered Chapman a victory in the end. But into it and under, we switched towards what you said, which was Chapman working for Spratt, which worked out in the race, but eventually GC-wise it didn't. Now when it comes to this race, you've got two climbs. You can use Chapman on the first climb to try and do an attack or slip into a move and so forth while Spratt focus on the last climb. That's possible. Or you can have Chapman force a move in between the climbs or before the climbs or on that small climb after
on Melville.
Yeah, exactly. After the Chalambra Crescent.
Crescent.
Pretend that was okay. Crescent? Okay. I'm learning
it. I bet you Americans will be like, that's not how we say it. Or
exactly.
So I'm probably saying it just for how Australians say it. It's not even anyway, right. It's not even English.
I agree that there's more that Trek can do with Chapman, and I think we're going to see that in the rest of the season. I'm thinking like at Ronde van Vlaanderen, and we'll see Chapman be more an offensive rider in the team, while they have stronger riders next to that, like a Balsamo and so forth, that will take more the leadership role in those races. But also when it comes to Amanda Spratt, I would say though, while she can't win a group sprint, I won't say she's terrible at sprinting. As in, I swear she got like fourth or third or something in that first sprint that Pikulik won in the Tour de l'Under, where she went on the right side of the road and still had a pretty good sprint. So it's like, if you got a 1v1 head-to-head sprint, I still say it's like 50-50 a lot of the time with a lot of the riders in this group. But that's not the case if you got 10 riders. So Chapman is pacing Spratt in this group, this 10-rider group that creates itself on top of that first Chalambra climb. I'm going to say climb at this point. And you're pacing her to the next climb. So that's what happens. And we do see Spratt making a move. Was it on Melville or was it like on the graphics at Queen's Park Road? But I think that's the same.
I think it might be that. Yeah, because I thought it would have been Melville. It's like a couple of Ks after the Chalambra climb. I think that's where they should have gone with Chapman, and then Spratt sits in the wheels, but she went there. But the bunch was coming back. They had Rosemond Gannon, Manley, There was no one else really helping Trek too much. A few people pulling through. I mean, Alhaist had Grace Brown behind, who she said was their leader before the race. So she was just mostly sitting on at this point because she's got Brown in that purple UCI leaders jersey. But as a reminder, the Zwift Hub Challenge, you got one day left, maybe less than 24 hours once this is uploaded. Zwift Hub Challenge, ride 25 Ks. You can join and then the code's redeemable. You got to join within, you know, 24 hours before end of 28 January, but then you can redeem it later. But you got to ride 25 Ks to unlock £50 or $50 or euros off of Zwift Hub, which is already the best value or best price trainer on the market. Let's try and break those 150,000 participants, which is a crazy number, going on the Zwift Hub and then getting straight onto Zwift afterwards. So go and check it out. You can see the link down below. Don't miss out on that extra discount off a Zwift Hub if you're in Europe, UK, or North America. But yeah, it comes back together. And this is where the race, the tactics really start to get interesting for me at least. Alhaist definitely talks to Brown and gets a free roll to go for the win at that point, yeah. I'm assuming. And Trek then start to attack before Chalambra, last climb, with Hansen. But then Georgia Howe goes with her from Jayco Alula. And I don't know, like, if you're another team, does Hansen dangling 20 seconds ahead really scare you? Like, how are they getting relatively better as Trek? Except for, shouldn't Hansen just go on the front and just set like a steady tempo and make sure that Chapman and Spratt enter the climb in good position?
I think the situation they're probably trying to create is send the rider up the road so that if Spratt attacks on that Chalambra, that Loretta Hansen can help Spratt out for a tiny bit still. Or they're creating a situation where they're forcing other teams to spend riders either chasing or hunting down Hansen. Because while you might think, okay, I'm an opposing team, it doesn't really matter, and Hansen is up the road, some other teams might still fall for that and might still spend riders doing that. I think some teams probably started chasing her, like with a Georgia Howe and Lauren Stevens from Yev as well. But those are also domestiques, so it's also not that they're using any leaders. So it's not really hurting as much as if, for example, a Manly would respond on that. But then again, Manly does respond on the next one. So I guess Hansen attacks then, again. Go ahead.
No, but before then, so Hansen got brought back. But then this happened on Corkscrew, right? Before Corkscrew, she makes the same mistake, or the same mistake is made. She doesn't attack just before Chalambra. I'm not talking when she and Howe went over the finish line. At the sprint, I'm talking after. She goes to the front, Spratt's third wheel. I think she's doing a lead out. I don't think she's attacking. And someone lets her wheel go because she's pushing way too hard. And I think that because when she turns around, she sees no one's on her wheel. She literally stops pedaling for like 3-4 seconds. Yeah. And that to me suggests it was not an attack. She then is like, well, fuck, I have a gap now, I got to go on with it. But I don't think her intention was to do that, because she did that into Corkscrew, remember? And then Chapman had to start her work earlier on Corkscrew, and so the same thing sort of happened today.
I recall speaking to a Trek rider about that specific thing on Corkscrew, where it was both the motorbike that was just before Hansen that improved the draft and so forth. But I also feel like when she's pacing at the front, that she just goes too hard in the first place. Or is that me thinking that?
Because I swear, first 30 seconds are too hard.
Yeah, too surgy.
Yeah.
Well, and so then
and Spratt kind of was just like, geez, something like, I think, and Spratt wasn't on her wheel directly. So then when the Zaf rider, I think, the Zaf rider was like, I'm not following that before the climb. And then Spratt's like, I'm not going to close this 10-meter gap to my teammate. Yeah. So that was a, I think, a bit of a problem, because at this point now, you got to have her just do hard lead out into the base and just have Chapman do full gas 1 minute and try and launch Spratt, because I don't think Spratt's winning a sprint against almost anyone in this group. She has to go solo.
I don't know. I think she's not as terrible as you're portraying here at sprinting. I think she can win a 1v1 sprint if it works out well. But it depends on who you've got with you. That's the issue.
I want to look through her palmares and see how many of them are not solo.
Okay. Valid.
I think there's a difference between high speed sprints and two up sprints. And I think
that's true.
Maybe a high speed sprint she's better, but yeah.
That's very possible.
I don't think she's got much of a chance.
Anyway, Hansen gets caught. Manley gets caught after doing exactly the same thing as Hansen, just after Hansen. And we're going with this group into the Chalambra Crescent. And that is the second time we do that climb. And we see, it was kind of weird. Chapman was pacing the first 2 meters of the climb, and then I expected Chapman to launch Spratt. But that didn't happen because someone else was launching before that. And that was Noskova, who came from his D-Works, joined Zaf now, and is actually getting pretty damn solid results. And this shows that a rider that did not necessarily get the best possibilities, opportunities at his D-Works can go to a team like Zaf and actually try and deliver the results on themselves here, because she makes that move and it looks really strong, because there's two people that can follow that. Amanda Spratt, Chapman's work is basically done at that point, because Spratt has to respond herself here. And then Luz Arahist, who also responded on the first Chalambra to the move by Double Hickok and Spratt earlier. So once again, the strongest, the same exact riders that were the strongest on the first Chalambra or the strongest on the second Chalambra. And we got a group of basically three riders for a tiny bit on the climb, because then Noskova drops. So do you think that Noskova would have been better off just not attacking and following Spratt's move, or do you think she would have dropped anyway?
I think she would have been better off being a bit more conservative, yeah. If you're not the strongest outright favorite and you're the first to attack, you're not doing yourself any favors. And she might have got a podium result here, maybe, very maybe, if she didn't attack right at the base and was on the wheel. Maybe she gets dropped anyway, because, yeah, Spratt kicks again and Arahist is just holding on, although she does kind of half-wheel her over the QOM point. So she kind of been in too much bother, because, yeah, she came alongside her over the crest. We then have a descent down into a quick descent, and then they do the Melville climb, and then it's about 6Ks to the finish. And Arahist doesn't pull through with the pedal stroke on that descent, which there's pedaling parts of it. So Spratt flicks her, Arahist just flows through with her body weight, and then immediately flicks Spratt again before Melville.
Yeah.
And then we have the Melville climb. And I think, I don't know, I'd have to watch her body language and pedal strokes again really closely, but I don't feel like Spratt threw in a huge attack on Melville. To me, it was a bit more like, you know, when Remco didn't attack Colbrelli on Eurochamps, when he just rode like the steadiest pace. No herky jerky. Kind of, I'm sure she was doing a hard pace, but she wrote like that. Chapman's behind, doing a lot of work disrupting, marking moves. This EF behind, and they crest Melville. What do you think they should do here with Spratt? Spratt has Arahist. I think quicker than Spratt. Maybe let's say it's 70-30. 70-30 Arahist in the sprint. Spratt still got a chance, but Arahist is doing 20% of the pulls max, maybe less at times. How do you think Spratt should react to that?
Well, I think the scenario is very difficult for the team in general, because you're in a situation where you either have to outsprint Arahist or try and attack Arahist in the run-in towards the finish line, or you decide, oh, we're going to go and sit up and try and get two riders again with Chapman in the group behind. But if they do that, that's a terrible situation, in my opinion. I don't think you're going to create something great out of that, because Chapman's not a great sprinter either compared to the people in that group still. So the only solution would have been that Spratt would have attacked Arahist in certain points. But I'll be honest, I wasn't outrageously like unconfident in Spratt either, in the sense that I thought there was a chance in a head-to-head that Spratt could still beat Elise Ardegeest in the sprint. Like, Ardegeest is not the slowest rider. She's quite fast. But I did feel like there was a chance for Spratt. So I won't say this is like the worst case choice either to try and go for the head-to-head personally. I know you disagree with that.
I would agree. I would agree, except once you see Ardegeest's lack of cooperation, I think that tips the probabilities too far into Ardegeest's favor if Spratt effectively is going to tow her to the line. Ardegeest did some pulls, but really Spratt did the lion's share of the work. And so I think at that point, it's like, just wait for Chapman to come back, roll attacks with two from the group, hope someone looks at each other. Chapman's a strong ruler. I think that's going to give you a better chance, because I really think, leading someone out like that, you're just not going to win. You won't win. You will get a podium spot. But I really don't think you win like that.
Is there a possibility that Spratt underrated Luz Ardegeest? Because we got to keep in mind, Ardegeest is only coming up as a rider in the last couple of years. If you remember, like 2 years ago, towards the end of 2021, she was the one that posted on Twitter that she was looking for a pro team, because she didn't have a contract at that point for 2022. And then she ended up riding for ICBT. Is that the correct order of that name? IBCT?
Yeah, Irish team.
So something like that. I don't know what order the letters are in. But anyway, she ended up riding for that team, and she ended up winning, by the way, Zwift World Championships in February last year. So that's also a pretty big thing, but that's also not necessarily a road result where a Spratt would immediately think, okay, that's something I need to watch out for. So you think that Ardegeest is underrated at this point, because she hasn't broken through yet until now?
I don't think it was a disrespect thing. I think she was wary of Ardegeest, I think.
Okay.
I think, and you see this in Men's World Tour, you'll see this same situation really often in one-day races. It almost kind of happened in Amstel Gold Race last year with Ineos, except Kwiatkowski won the photo. But you will see teams have two of the strongest five riders, and somehow they'll end up in a situation where they have one of two riders in front and their rider is doing most of the work. And so the numbers, whatever way you look at it, it's just not worked out as well as it could have. And it's really hard psychologically to wait. No one ever does it. No one ever really does it unless they're like, I don't know. I mean, Stefan Kung won't do it, Benji. Let's say another example, hypothetical. Kung is with Van der Poel.
Yep.
No climbs left. Madouaz is in a group behind with Christophe Laporte. Dylan Van Baarle. Madouaz is in a group behind with Dylan Van Baarle, 20 seconds behind. Kung should never pull, right?
No, but that's different there, because here we don't have the situation that there's a faster rider behind for Trek. Chapman is not going to win that sprint in the second group. That's the difference between those two.
Madouaz probably won't either.
Against Van Baarle?
Against Van Baarle and Van der Poel.
Ah, wow, that's a big difference. That's a big difference.
Well, Van der Poel's with Kung ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Hmm.
He'll never wait. He'll never do it.
Yeah. Is there an aspect of FDJ being happy with a second place here? With Trek being happy with at least a second place here in the situation that they're in?
Ardegeest didn't give a fuck. She had ice in her veins. There's been a long recap, because I actually enjoyed discussing this finish. And listen, like, if any of the Trek riders, you know, listen to the pod and disagree and think, no, there's X, Y, Z reason why this happened, you're wrong. I'm always open to hearing that as well. This is just how I sort of looked at the finish. But yeah, the Green Edge, Jayco-led group with Nina Buysman, another Dutch rider, catches Chapman, who'd been doing a good job for her role marking that move behind. Aargeest stops pulling, really. They stop pulling her and Spraat with a K to go. They did have a huge gap at that point, and it started to dwindle. Spraat tries to finesse Aargeest. Aargeest looks at her and just starts track standing, and it's like, I will come last in this race if I have to. And she looks at Spraat, and it goes 5, 4, 3, 2. Spraat goes back to the front and starts soft tapping. So maybe that's a long answer to your point, Benji, that, yeah, Aargeest didn't care. Well, at least gave the appearance that she didn't care. She was happy to lose second if it meant she could win. Spraat was like, ah, we're here now. Let's not get caught. And I guess Alaphilippe and Fuglsang, Benji, Amstel Gold Race, you can end up like them if you finesse too much. So
Amstel, Longo Borghini, was it Nivea Doma or who was it
in Amstel? Exactly, Nivea Doma. And then I'd probably be sitting here being like, Aargeest, what an idiot. with 20-20 hindsight. Anyway, Spraat leaves it out a little bit, and then Aargeest goes too early, actually. And I think if Spraat, to Benji's point, which I agree here, if Spraat had been in her wheel and Aargeest goes that far out, Spratt's got a chance to win this. But she wasn't, and she couldn't really come alongside, and she wins the race. So, I mean, Benji started by saying this is an interesting parkour. It definitely gave me a lot to think about. So I think it was a pretty good race in the finish.
Yep, I think so as well. I would also like to add, when it comes to like the second group, we saw De Francesco once again attacking. Like, that's one of the riders that has been so undercover throughout the last few weeks. As in the Bay Crits, she was top 10 in those races, but that's like national crits. So meh, Australians care about that. But me as a premium Belgian.
The disrespect. Tim Merlier would get smacked in those crits.
Probably, actually. But fifth in the road race and ITT of the national championships. And then she ends up getting twice fourth in Tour Down Under stages and 16 GC, now fifth in this race. She's also quite underrated. And she's once again from the Zaf team. So Zaf's actually got a pretty damn solid team, like the way they're acting right now. Now, can De Francesco do this in like European races? We still have to see. So I don't know. There, once again, the young riders that we mentioned in Tour Down Under, like Henrietta Christie, I think she won the white jersey, if I recall correctly, in that race. Yeah. She's once again here in that second group. Nina Buysman actually becoming a pretty damn fast rider, quite a versatile fast rider as well. She's also prominent here, getting that final third spot. So I'm kind of surprised that Simone Boila was not sprinting better towards the end. But maybe she was just ruined by the climb, I'm guessing, based on that. But hey, what else do you have to offer when it comes to this race?
Rachel Nalen, she still looks really strong. Her result could have been better than that. Not her fault, but she was in that group chasing Spraat and Aargeest and doing a lot of the work and wasn't getting cooperation. Roseman Gannon, you know, she scored a lot of points already so far. Williamson, Doble Hickok continue to be strong. And who else do I want to point out? Claire Steeles also was strong on Israel. She has looked good so far. She should be valuable in Europe.
Roseman Gannon has scored points so far. Manly has won a stage so far. But do you think Jayco should be disappointed in their performance in the last month, knowing that they've lost Spraat and they haven't been able to deliver the same results as last year? Because I think Roseman Gannon won the Tour Down Under Festival, whatever it was called.
I mean, you can't compare that race to the World Tour races. Did I expect Roseman Gannon to be able to go with like Aargeest? Kind of, to be honest. Kind of. Because she wasn't in the group. She wasn't in the second group either, from memory. So I would expect her to be in that second group.
Where's Brown?
Brown, yeah, she had an off day. She like fully dropped. She came 21st. And so Spraat with her second goes into that purple UCI points leaders jersey. But I guess good on Brown for communicating to Aargeest to go for it. because,
yep.
like, yeah, if you don't communicate that and then it's too late, then everyone gets mad at Remco in the 2021 World Champs in Leuven, right?
Everything has to get back to Remco at some point.
yeah. Everything, yeah. I mean, we'll do a San Juan recap in due course, but I had to throw that one in there. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's tough as well because it's January. Who knows? But Adelheis looks legit. I don't think this is some fluke result. She's yeah. legit. So we should expect her to be strong in the Hill Classics, Provence Pale type races
but
once she flies back.
Who is she? Is she Dutch Chapman or a different style of rider?
Chapman.
Chapman.
I don't know. I think she's just like Hill Classics rider, Tour de Wallonie. That sort of rider, yeah, just a strong rider, half decent sprint, decent tactics, gets over a punchy hill. Spratt must have been doing good watts. Spratt ruined everyone else. So we got to see her at Flesh and Liège as well. We got to see her in Amstel, Flesh, Liège.
Cobbles is where I see Adelheis. I don't know why, really? But I feel like Cobbles.
1K, 9%. Doing it with Spratt in good form, who did a really fast corkscrew. And she didn't look too on the limit to me. I mean, that's Tour of Flanders too, right? Like, with mm-hmm. the cobbles, like, the climbs are not less than a minute, some of the hardest ones, so...
She was in Brabants, I think, in the group with... I think she was one of the only ones that followed a Vollering move at some point last year in Brabants. So
12th.
Maybe year. A mix of cobbles and hills, eh? Maybe we're just guessing the right thing, both of us, and she's going to do both.
Probably, yeah. Like, Lisa Longaborghini does every damn race. Pretty well, so maybe she's that sort of rider in the future. That's a good comparable, I think. Wouldn't be a bad one to shoot for. Anyway, quite an interesting race. I will have the men's recap tomorrow. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks to Zwift as always, and we'll see you with that recap tomorrow morning Euro time. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.